You're listening to a Sound Vision Online podcast.
Find us at soundvisiononline.co.uk. A very sunny hello from the Sound Vision Online team. You're very welcome to the Summer 2016 compilation. All the best bits from Sound Vision Online from the past 3 months. I'm Michael Selby.
Hi, I'm Sharon Jennings.
And I'm Joe Kenny.
Well, coming up on today's show, we hear from Jennifer Fahey about audio description in theatres, who uses it and why.
And Jackie Brown brings us more of her tremendous tech that know-how. And she also talks to Andrew Hodgson, chair of BCAB, a support association providing help to blind computer users across the UK.
And I speak to Michael Law and Niall Dempsey about The Dark Experience, a new team-building activity right here in Belfast.
All that and so much more besides. So we've decided that to kick off, we're going to bring a little summer sunshine. We're each going to say something positive because when we all arrived today, we've just sat and moaned for about the last 45 minutes. So, Sharon, something positive. How are things with you?
Things are good now. I've got the moaning out of the way.
Yeah.
You know, it's good. It's good to be positive, but I think it's good to have a moan as
well. I agree, totally.
Just as long as it doesn't it doesn't become the dominant feeling that you express to other people.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I'm absolutely fine. I mean, it's our weather hasn't been too bad until recently, and then we've had a lot of rain, so let's hope the rest of the summer does go well and we get some good weather to sit and sunbathe. I've been doing a lot of baking recently. I qualified recently as a yoga teacher, so a lot of the people that I would be around at the moment are vegans and gluten-free, so I'm developing my knowledge of vegan.
Did you bring air freshener to your yoga class?
No.
Sorry.
I mean, I must admit, I've got this thing, I'm partial to an odd Chinese curry. I do like them, but I found if you eat a veg curry, it is so tasty. It's tastier than a meat curry.
I would do quite a few stir fries with, you know, in the wok, just throwing a whole load of stuff together in the wok. But I tell you what I discovered the other night. Well, not discovered, I've been meaning to try it for ages, but I look at a lot of vegan food sometimes and gluten-free stuff and kind of turn my nose up at it and think it's all just fatty. And there's this thing I've kind of seen pictures around of recently, which is whizzed up cauliflower as a...
Oh, I saw that. It's kind of like a couscous alternative
sort
of thing.
Or a rice.
It looks grim.
I did it the other night and it was absolutely amazing. And it was so tasty
so quick. I think I've seen that. George Martin, is that his name?
He was the producer of the Beatles.
No.
Are you thinking James Martin?
Sorry, yeah, I am. Yes.
It's like the Brains Trust here, isn't it?
Well, James Martin, the
Eleanor Rigby.
Yeah, James Martin's a celebrity chef. And yeah, he's fully on board with this whole whizzed up cauliflower thing.
Funny, you talk about sort of feeling full, or you're not convinced you can feel full on vegetarian food. I'm not veggie. We've been through this many times. I would quite like to be veggie, but I'm not. But one of my favourite kind of stodgy lunches is you make kind of like a small cheese omelette and stick it between two bits of bread with a splodge of ketchup. Wow. It's amazing.
I made the other night courgette and spinach fritters, which I've always wanted to do something like that. And I thought that's really, really complicated. But actually, it's really just like how you'd put an omelette together with a bit of flour and then you just kind of shape them into patties and fry them. So loads of little experiments I've been doing in the cookery department.
Mm-hmm. We have, on terms of positive things, Joe, how's the preparations going for the new arrival?
Yay.
Well, we're just about 4 or 5 weeks out now.
It's very exciting.
And so it's flat out buying clothes, nappies, flat pack furniture.
Hot tiles, buckets of water.
Buckets of water.
I think that's what's needed.
I think, to be honest, I've made it my mission trying to find out why do they always ask for towels and was it hot towels and boiling water? I really don't know. I still don't know yet.
Maybe if it comes early in the middle of the night and you're at home and you have to deliver the baby, that's maybe when you'll find out.
The very thought. We're actually currently in the middle of our antenatal classes and there's a sort of a series of three of them. And they're about 2.5 hours each. And it's really quite... It's quite something. The information you hear is... I'm not going to details here, obviously, but wow. That's all I'll say.
Okay. Thank you for that lovely story.
Yeah.
I don't really have anything to contribute to the lovely theme, other than I had a cold which has lasted about 4 weeks, and apparently everybody else's cold has lasted about 4 weeks. Ah. I think I've just kind of cleared out boots of sort of all their like their strepsils and their night nurse and stuff. I don't know what is knocking around inside my body, but
that's not good.
It's not, but I sleep well, you know.
I must say, you sound better, Mike. You do.
Right. Anyway, down to business, and we kick off this time with audio description. Jennifer Fahey reports for Sound Vision Online.
My name is Jennifer, and today I'm talking to Kate Ingram. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Jennifer. Hi.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Pleasure.
So, Kate, you work with Northern Ireland Sightlines. Could you tell us a little bit about them?
Yes, it is a group of people who audio describe mainly theatre, but sometimes other live events, sometimes exhibitions, and sometimes dance. And we were trained in the year 2000, which is easy enough to remember. Mm-hmm. And we've been working audio describing in Northern Ireland and for a while in Dublin ever since.
Great.
And there are about eight of us in total, or actually seven. But as things happen, some people have more availability than others. So at the moment, we're in the process of training another four people.
Oh, lovely. So for those of us not really in the know, could you talk a little bit about audio description and what that entails?
Well, live audio description aims to enable blind and visually impaired people to appreciate theatre in exactly the same way as people who are sighted. So we describe the visual element of theatre, and hopefully we do that in between the dialogue, so we don't actually ever speak over an actor. So the blind people get exactly the same sound as the sighted people, but it's enhanced by the visual description which they have in through a headset in their ear.
Right. And I imagine that can be kind of difficult. How do you prepare an audio description?
Right. Well, it's quite a lengthy process. We start off by going to see the show, first of all. And when we are in the show, we first of all make what we call program notes or introductory notes. You can call it either. And they would detail the set. So they would describe exactly what the set is and, you know, what it's like, importantly, where the doors are so that the blind people can get a feel about where people coming in and going off. It also would describe the scale of the set. So mm-hmm. If it looks huge or if it looks small, that's very important too. The colours of the set. Colour can be an issue because some blind people have never known colour if they've been blind from birth. But most people seem to say that they get some kind of an impression, even of the emotion that a colour gives you. So we describe the set, and then we go on to describe the characters, their physical appearance, and the costumes they're wearing. And sometimes if there's information in the programme, we replicate that. Then when we've made notes, extensive notes on this, we go away and we write it all down, and then we put it up on the NI Sightlines website, www.nisightlines.co.uk, and the programme notes are all then put up on there before the actual audio described performance.
Right, so that's available then?
That's available before people go to the show. Mm-hmm. It is also available at the show because we read it before the performance starts.
I see, as an audio introduction.
An audio introduction. So we encourage blind people to take their seats 10 minutes before the show starts. In fact, as soon as the house opens, mm-hmm. so that they can hear the introduction, even if they've heard it before, just to refresh their memory, but also so that they can test the headsets, because sometimes the headsets aren't working properly, and we need to know that before the show starts so that we can rectify it. Mm. So we do the programme notes, and then that's done. We think, great, we've done that. That's the first stage over. And then we get a DVD of the performance, and we go over it again and again and again and again alongside the script. So whenever there's a pause in the script and an important piece of action, we write in what it is we want to say. Mm-hmm. And quite often we have to pare down our description so that it fits the gap mm-hmm. in the dialogue, because we do try our very best not to speak over the spoken word, not to speak over the play as it's passing, as it's progressing. And there is a fine line between describing too much and describing too little.
Of course.
And our aim is to describe the essentials without annoying the person who's listening to us.
And what kind of feedback have you gotten from people who've come and heard audio descriptions that you've delivered?
In general, we've always had very positive feedback. I mean, some exceptionally positive. I mean, there was, I think I said we described in Dublin for a while, and we won't ever forget the person, a sister of a blind man, who came out in tears because she said it had enabled him to go back to the theatre again. He'd loved the theatre before he lost his sight, and he really didn't think he could appreciate it, but he had enjoyed it so much that she was in tears. The emotion was too much for her.
Yeah,
so that was lovely. You know, that was the highlight, I suppose. But in general, we get very, very positive feedback.
And is there much audio description available in Northern Ireland these days?
A surprising amount, actually. The Lyric always audio describes every show it produces. It doesn't audio describe shows that come into it. So, for example, it's not audio describing the current show, which is a Stuart Parker show, because it's coming from the Abbey. So that won't be audio described. In general, they audio, there is one audio described performance of all of their show, or all of their in-house shows. So there's a run of 3 weeks for their in-house shows, and the audio described performance is in the Thursday of the last week, on the Thursday of the last week, which is, from our point of view, excellent, because it gives us the chance to see the show as many times as we need to. If we need to supplement looking at the DVD, if the DVD isn't particularly good quality, we can go back to the show. It also gives us plenty of time to prepare the our script. So that happens at the Lyric, every show. The Grand Opera House also audio describes a large, a high percentage of its shows, not every show, but a high percentage of them. They're more challenging to audio describe because the runs are usually only 1 week long. So we get to see the show as soon as it arrives, which isn't always on a Monday. It's usually on a Tuesday. And then we audio describe it, generally speaking, on the Saturday matinee. But not always. So we've got the Lyric, and we've got the Opera House, and then we have the Mac, which is a bit slow to enter the field of audio description, but has entered it now very successfully. And they would, they audio describe, they just audio described Pacoon by Spike Milligan, which I believe went well. And they, and also I did After Miss Julie for them, which was a Strindberg play, which was a very well done, actually, and set in Northern Ireland. And then they always do their Christmas show. And this is our busiest time, of course. It's the theatre's busiest time. So it's our, the audio describer's busiest time, because we have a lot of shows to audio describe at Christmas.
And that's all over Northern Ireland, is it?
No,
no,
it is not.
Mainly
it is,
Belfast?
It's only in Belfast at the moment.
Okay.
That's the sad thing about audio description. We're trying to get the touring companies to actually attach audio description to their shows, but they haven't done so. And if you want to find out exactly what is going on in September, as soon as we get the information, it will be on our website, which I think I've mentioned the address
we
of before,
indeed, yes.
But just in case, I'll remind
again.
You again. It's www.nisightlines.co.uk.
Kate, thanks for talking to us. Well, from an audio describer point of view to an audience point of view, I caught up with some audience members at a recent audio describe performance at the Lyric Theatre. Here's how I got on. So I'm here at the Lyric Theatre in Belfast at an audio describe performance of the new play Smiley by Gary Mitchell. And I'm going to chat to three of the audience members to see what they think. So, hello guys. Would you mind just introducing yourselves? Tell us where you're from and your level of sight loss.
Hello, my name is Joe, and I'm actually from Bangor, and I've got RP.
I'm Susan from Bangor also, and I'm totally blind. I've no sight.
Okay. I'm David from Bangor. I'm registered blind, but with a little bit of residual vision close up to.
And so, are you all regular theatre goers?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, we are.
And where would you usually go to see plays?
The Opera House for me, for some of the musicals and plays, mainly the musicals.
Okay.
So it would mainly be the Opera House, because it's easy to get to transport-wise, and their audio description service is quite good in there.
Yeah, we go to the Lyric Theatre here tonight, you know, sometimes, and we also go to the Mac Theatre.
And sometimes we would actually support some of the local plays in Bangor, like it used to be called the Studio One, but that is closed down now, but they have a new venue, but I haven't been to the new venue yet. But some of them shows, most of them, sorry, shows wouldn't be already described, but some of the shows you can still follow, they're quite good.
And so what do you guys think of audio description in general?
Oh, well, if you're going to see a play, okay, like tonight, if you're going to see that play, you wouldn't know half of what was happening, because there's so many quiet bits in it. And when it's audio described, the audio description girl tells you what facial expressions, what they're wearing, what the background, what the scenery is, and just all different kinds of information like that, which brings the play more to life for us.
Yes, I would have to say that also. I mean, it gets you more involved in the play. You know exactly what's happening and see what's the funny parts and the serious parts, the people's expressions on their faces, and also the different stage is actually set out.
And before the play would start, they'll give you a complete rundown of what the set's going to be like, what actors and actresses are playing what part, how they'll be dressed costume-wise, what the lighting will be like, what type of lighting will be used. They'll tell you if there's a character on stage, maybe that character doesn't have a speaking part, but that character could be on stage, and they'll tell you beforehand what they'll be doing. So you get a full introduction, and as Susan says, it makes a world of difference because it brings the whole play to life for us.
And what would you say to someone who hasn't tried audio description yet?
Oh, get out there and try it. They don't know what they're missing. It's brilliant. You know, it's like the comedy plays there, like tonight. You know, there's bits in it that's funny, but everybody else in the audience would be laughing, and we're sitting there going, oh, what they're laughing at. But, you know, now we can join in with that, and we know what they're laughing at, and join in, you know, having a better understanding of the play as well, you know.
We'll check back in after watching the show.
Oh, you're playing very well.
We all did.
Here, so let's go, sir.
Second one was an OG. Defender off that ginger defender. That makes it an own goal.
It was going in, and that makes it my goal.
Does it?
Yes. Oh, my God, right. If a goalkeeper tries to save a shot, but it was on and off her own hand anyway, that doesn't count as an own goal. If it did, goalkeepers all over the world would have scored thousands of OGs.
Right, so we're at the interval of the play now, and how are you all finding the play?
It's great, very funny, and we're able to keep up with what's happening on stage, obviously, with the audio description. Very, very good.
Because there has been a few times that we didn't know what was going on, and the girl who was speaking and spoke actually gave us, like, example, the girl clicked her fingers and a gentleman moved a chair out of the way. If the audio description wasn't there, we wouldn't have known that happened on the stage. And just different things throughout the play that actually has happened.
Yes, it does make the difference, because it means if the audio describer is able to describe what the costumes the girl was wearing when she was taking her jacket and stuff off and putting other stuff on. And as Joe says, if someone does an action on stage without speech, then the order describer will tell us what that is, and it's very good. I happen to recognise the order describer's voice, so we know the person that's doing the order describer.
And so you've heard her descriptions before?
Yes, in the opera house.
And so this is a comedy, and are you finding that the audio description helps you with the visual clues for the jokes?
Yes, yep. Very much so, yes. Like
facial expressions?
Yeah, facial expressions, as Joe says, and then also whenever the one of the guys come in wearing the red hand Ulster socks and shorts, you know, well, we wouldn't have known what they were laughing at until she said. Yeah.
Yes, this is one of my first experiences listening to audio description, and I like that she's kind of mimicking the tone of each scene.
Yes, she's very much got it. That's very, very good.
So R&I BNI have recently launched what it called the Dark Experience. This is a team-building activity for groups of sighted people to experience completing everyday tasks without sight. Trusting your teammates and thinking around problems is all part of this unique attraction based right here at the Belfast Activity Centre.
Now, if you work for a company or an organisation, you'll have no doubt heard the magic phrase team building. That day of the year, perhaps, when you and your colleagues get out of the office and get a chance to experience something new and have a bit of fun at the same time. RNIB Northern Ireland have just launched the Dark Experience, a unique team-building exercise where sighted people get to try a series of challenges whilst blindfolded. I spoke to Michael Law, business manager of RNIB Northern Ireland, and Niall Dempsey from our youth service, who explain further. Firstly, I'm going to come to you, Michael. What is the Dark Experience?
I deal quite a bit with the commercial companies in Northern Ireland to try and make them create awareness for blind or partially sighted people and the problems and disadvantages that they may have. The Dark Experience has come about where a lot of companies now are looking to do team building exercises, but they don't want to be seen that some sort of a jolly for their staff. We've designed this over the last 12 months and it's a three-part series of where people will go up to Barnes Park, to the Belfast Activity Centre, and we will have a series of activities for them and their teams to work through. It goes in three parts. The initial part is the core event, which is the Dark Experience. Now for this, which I'll let Niall cover a wee bit further, the in-depth, but for this what we do is we take the team of people and we will blindfold them and they will have the facility of a cane. It will basically, it's relying on your team members to help you through a series of obstacles and challenges. It makes you think out of the box, it makes you rely on your colleagues, and also it is one of those areas where it makes other parts of your brain have to work in other senses. We couple that with the second part, which is purely optional because it is like menu price in this, where they can actually have dine in the dark at the local restaurant, and that can either be eating a sandwich blindfolded or it can be having a three-course meal. Again, it just explores the areas and the difficulties that people may experience should they be blind or partially sighted of having to traverse around a plate of food, etc. And the final part, which again is to do with team building, is where Niall and the team will actually go through, from a company perspective, how they should be working to understand sight loss, the problems, the issues, how information should be accessible, and what companies and large businesses should be doing to help and support people who are blind and partially sighted.
As the name suggests, it's a whole dark experience. You've got the core activity, which is people being blindfolded and going around in, like, I suppose, an obstacle course. And then you've got the dining in the dark, which is eating whilst blindfolded as well. And then, of course, you've got then the awareness giving, the kind of, you know, making people aware of the issues and, well, and some of the solutions available for people who are blind and partially sighted out there.
Yeah, that's absolutely it, Joe. The whole idea behind this is that it's team building, it's character building, and it also makes people think outside of the box and be aware of the difficulties that people who are blind and partially sighted have to experience on a daily basis.
And so we've recently ran a few pilot versions of this, Niall, isn't that right?
Yeah, I'd say we probably had about 20 groups of people through this experience so far.
Maybe you could just maybe explain a little bit about what exactly have people experienced? What have they kind of got out of this so far?
Well, each session is slightly tailored to the group you're dealing with, depending on what will give the most benefit for them in terms of their learning from it. But in general, groups will come together and, as Michael said, they'll be given a blindfold and a cane and given some instruction on how to use that. And then they will set off around a series of challenges, some of them everyday challenges that people who are blind and partially sighted come across all the time, and some a bit more unique to the venue it's in, but they're all geared towards making people think about how to use their other senses to overcome obstacles, but also we give them gadgets along the way to support them to overcome the challenges, so that we're not just giving the impression that there's only problems out there for blind and partially sighted people, but there are definitely solutions as well, as long as they know where to look.
I see, so it's like presenting the problem and then presenting the solution.
Yeah, because again, we want people to understand that while there are challenges for people, there are also solutions there, and we want to make sure we get both sides of the coin across to them. And then obviously it means that there's generally more awareness for people, so if they do happen to take on an employee who's blind or partially sighted, or have a customer who's blind or partially sighted, they'll be in a better position to give them the same standard of service they would anybody else.
At a recent pilot for the Dark Experience, we caught up with a few people who were happy to share some of the thoughts and feelings they had about wearing a blindfold and using their other senses to navigate.
For me, it was the lack of control. You know, how you're just, everything you knew is gone. The lack of spatial awareness that you have.
For me, it was things that ordinarily you would take for granted. So when we came to the shop and you had to count out your 40 pence for your purchase, I suppose it's something that never occurred to me before, that you would have such difficulty with sight loss, trying to differentiate each coin, little task like that. Yeah.
For me, it was just the uncertainty of what's around you and so on, and you could walk in and bash your head against something. You have to remember it. Feel above you and feel down around your feet and so on, and that's really it.
For me, it was a really great experience, and it really gives you an idea of what it's like to be for the people that is partially sighted or blind or has sight problems.
I found it was a good insight into getting actually a bit of use of the cane, you know, in an outside environment, and then just how attached you would actually become to the cane, and make sure you find something, you know, a good bit in front of you first before you end up walking in to it.
I think for me, I felt really vulnerable, and that's quite a scary feeling to have, isn't it? That you, that anything could happen to you at any point. You could fall over. I mean, even though we had the helmet on and all of that, but a great insight into how important it is, like when you're guiding, to really be on the job. Mm-hmm. How that communication, if you're guiding.
For me, fear of the unknown. But it was a worthwhile experience and really, really enjoyable.
They've all been very positive. I mean, there have been instances where people have said they have felt a bit scared or maybe a bit claustrophobic in certain parts during the experience, but looking back on it, they're glad they went through it. They've said it was challenging and engaging and definitely a worthwhile use of their time. With some groups through where that you can tell the team building aspect has come across really well. They're competitive from the quiz at the start all the way through the actual challenges right to the end. So I think for a corporate group, it's a good way to spend the day getting some useful knowledge to help their business, but as Michael said, also doing some important team building.
I suppose too, I mean, there's a lot to be said for that shared experience. If you put a group of people in a situation like that, when they've completed it, there's definitely a sense of accomplishment and a sense that they've been through something.
Yeah, I mean, we try and make it as challenging as possible for them without obviously making it impossible. So they do definitely come across some challenges that do cause them to, you know, test themselves and, as Michael said, rely on their colleagues or, of course, the staff that are there to support them. But they definitely get a sense at the end that they've done something a bit unique and something worthwhile.
Mm. Michael, you said there just before we recorded this that a couple of people have said to you how when they're blindfolded, they'd have gone through the course and thought they've walked miles, but when they had their blindfold off, they realised they haven't walked very far at all.
Yeah, I mean, I was one of those people. I was on the pilot, and certainly I felt as if I'd walked into Belfast and come back again. But effectively, I hadn't. But again, that created an awareness for me of how my surroundings are, from something as simple as taking coins out to purchase a packet of crisps, or even hanging out, washing on the line. It made me sort of think differently. And I say it is quite, claustrophobic is one word, but it is quite challenging. But at the same time, when you're finished it, you think to yourself, right, I have a different perspective and a different outlook totally on how someone who's blind or partially sighted has to traverse even around a busy city like Belfast.
You've mentioned there about taking out coins and hanging out washing. What sort of activities is there then within that whole, especially the core dark experience bit?
Well, there's the general navigation of how to use a cane to get around obstacles that come along the path. There are also some daily living activities such as trying to use coins to buy something at a shop, pouring yourself a glass of water without throwing it all over the place, hanging up clothes, finding things using other senses such as sound or texture and feel. So there's a different range of challenges, and like I said, we try and vary it for each group depending on what will make the biggest impact on them. We have a section in it where the group will use sim specs to simulate different eye conditions, and we try and relate that to their general area of interest. For example, we had beauty therapy students in wearing simulation glasses trying to paint each other's nails. We've had jewellery makers in trying to make jewellery kits with the sim specs on, so it can be a very tailored experience to whatever group decides to take part.
It does sound very versatile. So Michael, I mean, how do people get in touch and find out more?
Well, effectively, they can contact myself via the email, which is michael.law@rnib.org.uk, or again, come through the normal RNIB switchboard and it'll in Belfast here, and they'll be put through to myself, and I can negotiate with Niall and his team for when we can set up times and spaces available. Certainly in terms of the companies that we've spoke to, they've said that they've had major budgetary constraints in Northern Ireland over the last 12 to 18 months, but they do now feel that there's a need for team building, so the government bodies and people who are front-facing with members of the public, that they're more aware and astute at the same time using the team building. So by all means, in terms of contact, the first point of call would be myself. If they can't get me, they go through the switchboard and we will always get back to them immediately.
So there you are. So it's a team building experience, and I mean, I've actually gone through the pilot myself, and it's well worth it. So if you want to find out more, folks, you can give our RNIB Belfast office a call here on 028 90 329 373, or as Michael says, you can email michael.law@rnib.org.uk. of course, you can always visit our website and search for dark experience at rnib.org.uk. Michael, Niall, thank you very much for coming in to talk to me today.
Thanks, Joe.
No problem, Joe.
All right, I'll see you all again soon.
I really highly recommend anyone to go and give it a go at the dark experience. I did it last year and it's a very interesting experience. Obviously, you can never really understand what it's like to be blind or partially sighted as a sighted person, but it does give you a little bit of flavour.
I think anything that makes people think or be more considerate, I think that has to be a good thing. But as you say, obviously, you know, you're not saying, you know, here you're going to be blind for, you know, a set period of time, because that would be obviously insulting.
I mean, talking to a few of the guys there that day who were blind, and they were saying, like, obviously as a blind person, it's something that you get used to, but putting one foot in front of the other and not knowing whether your foot was going to be on level ground, whether it was going to hit a rock, because it was, you know, the centre's kind of, it's the terrain's not completely flat. It was just a very surreal experience. It was a very discombobulating experience. Mm-hmm. It really, really was. There's a great word, discombobulating.
Here's another good word, Joe.
What?
Techspert.
Oh, yes. Excellent. Brilliant. Yeah, moving on then. Our resident techspert, Jackie Brown, love the word, was now going to bring us another of her insightful tech know-how.
Now, there are lots of scanners on the market, but they come in different forms. There are the flatbed kind, which have a lid on top and you lay your document or item on the glass underneath and close the lid and then press the scanner button or a key on your computer. These ones are normally attached to the computer, but you can get flatbed scanners which are standalone as well. But the one I'm going to talk to you about today is the Read Easy Move, which is a standalone scanner with built-in speech synthesis, but it has a camera, so it has an arm sitting on the top of the scanner and a mat which you stand the unit on at the edge to keep it still. And then the rest of the mat is the area where you lay your product or document or whatever it is you want to scan, and press a button on the top of Read Easy Move and it will take a picture. So it's not actually a flatbed scanner, it's a camera scanner. And this one you can take anywhere, although it's mains only, but you can take it anywhere because it's quite portable and it really is quite fast and it scans pretty well. So I'm going to start with, I've got a few items here and I'm going to turn the unit on from scratch so that you can hear what it sounds like, how quickly it boots up, because it really is quite quick. I think of all the scanners I've tested so far, this is the quickest one. And this is a scanner that my husband and I keep downstairs in a spare bedroom so that when we get our post in the morning and we haven't got our computers turned on, we can just scan our mail, and it's quite good at doing that, and you don't have to open the letters before you scan them. You can just scan through the little window, and it's quite good at boxes and sort of products like, well, we'll try in a minute, but I've got a few items here, but it is good at recording sort of medication and sort of just household boxes of stuff, perhaps a freezer box. So there are lots of things you can use with it. The advantage being that the camera arm sits on top of the scanner and has enough room to let you have a fairly large item underneath it to scan, whereas a flatbed scanner is more difficult with boxes and cylindrical items because you need to close the lid and the glass is very flat. So it has its advantages and it has its disadvantages. So we'll start the Read Easy Move up and we'll see how we get on with a few things to scan. So I'm going to press the button now. And it's actually starting. It takes about 15 seconds for the voice to announce that Read Easy Move is ready, so we'll just wait and see what he says.
Read Easy is now ready.
Okay, you got that. So Read Easy is now ready. That's the famous Daniel voice. So what I've done is set Daniel to the menu voice and gives you all the sort of prompts. And I have another voice to which I think is Serena, and she does the reading. So we have a few items here. I'll start with this one and see what it tells us. I know what it is, but let's see. Now, there are several buttons on top of the scanner, but not too many. There's a scan button, and there is sort of a few arrow keys so that you can move up and down the document. You can speed it up and slow it down if you want to. And there's a volume on the side that you can turn it up if you wish. This is a very basic unit in terms of what it offers, because there are extras you can buy for it. There is a pack which you can add to it that will let you see the screen, so you can see what if you have some sight, you can see what's happening. And there's a case that goes with it if you want to buy it as an extra as well. But, you know, I think for £1,500, which is what we paid for this, I think it's more than enough, thank you very much. So we kept it fairly simple. We didn't want any extras because we have the PC to do the complicated tasks. We just wanted a scanner downstairs that we can sort of pop in and out of the room, read something quickly, an advert, a leaflet or something that comes through the door, our mail in the morning, sort out our talking books. Just something that we have downstairs. It saves us running up and putting the computers on and waiting for any updates that it might want and so on. So this is really ideal for us, and we didn't want any bells and whistles, which is what you can add to this scanner. It is quite a powerful unit. So with that in mind, I'm going to press the scanner button.
Capturing. Recognizing.
Paracetamol 500 milligram caplets. For the relief of mild to moderate pain including headache, migraine, neuralgia, tooth ash, sore throat and period pain. Also for the symptomatic relief of rheumatic and muscular aches and pains, sciatica, fibrositis, lumbago, joint swelling and stiffness, influenza, feverish colds and feverishness. Please re-add the enclosed leaflet carefully before use. Dosage: swallow the caplets, preferably with a drink of water. Adults, the elderly and children over 12 years, take one or two caplets up to four times a day, as required. Children 6 to 12 year, half to one caplet up to four times a day, as required.
Okay, so you get the gist that is a packet of paracetamol. Now, on a flatbed scanner, it might have not been too bad to scan that because the box is not really very thick. But there are some boxes that would be quite difficult. So that gives you an idea that if you've got medication, it will actually tell you what it is, hopefully. So I'll put that to one side and we'll try another item. Now, this is a slightly bigger box and it's slightly thicker as well. So I just place that on the mat in front of the scanner. So it's easy to line up your document or whatever it is you want to scan, because it has a mat which comes with it, and the scanner stands at one end of the mat, leaving you a really good area in front of it. And the camera sits on an arm above the scanner, and it's really, really good at picking up stuff. So if I press the button again.
Capturing. Recognizing.
Daily repair. Its advanced formula remineralizes teeth and helps restore enamel. Before. 12-hour protection for a healthy amount. Amanand. N equals dot AFFFIFE.
End of document.
Okay, so that's a tube of toothpaste, in case you didn't know. It's a fairly big box and quite thick, but it does give you an idea of what the thing is. So that's another item. Now I've got a document this time that I'm going to lay on the mat in front of the scanner. It's really good because you can line it up against the scanner, so you've got no fiddling about with this whatsoever. And then I'll just press the button again and that's all you do.
Capturing. Recognizing.
Installation. 4. 3.1 Unpacking of the embosser. Unpack the embosser gently and check the items, save the packing material and transport locks in case of future transportation of the embosser. The 2-year warranty on parts is only valid if the embosser is transported in professional packaging and transport locks properly in place. The following is included in shipment.
Okay, so that's an embosser manual, which is a sort of, it's an A4 manual, and I don't know what the print's like in it because I don't have any sight to see it, but it certainly gets the gist of what you want. Now, with this scanner, if you buy extra packs, you can get one of the feature packs that go with it, additional cost, of course, that will allow you to save documents and things. Our scanner doesn't save any documents. There are ports on here, USB ports that let you save it to a memory stick and stuff like that. Ours is just a very basic setup because the more you have the scanner doing, the more you're going to pay for it, obviously. So we felt that for £1,500, as I said before, it's more than enough for our needs. So that gives you a gist. It's very quick. It's very quiet. There isn't really, you know, anything else to it. It does what it says on the box. I think it's a great product. Personally, it gets my endorsement of all the ones I've tried. To me, this is the quickest. And if you want more information, it's available and sold in the UK by VisionAid International Limited. My advice is to contact them if you prefer one of the feature packs to go with it, but are not sure which is for you. Get in touch with them on 01775 711977, or you can visit their website at www.visionaid.co.uk. I hope this has been of some use, and remember that you can always go to the web or give them a call. They're very helpful. They are very nice. We got our unit very quickly once we placed an order, so get in touch if you're interested.
Now, RNIB recently launched the iWork 2 project, providing support and training to people finding work or who might have trouble in an existing job because of a problem with their sight. Joe spoke to Martin Branny, project coordinator, and Charlie Gibson, who recently completed a work placement right here in the RNIB shop.
With me, I've got Martin Branny, the project coordinator, and Charlie Gibson, who's just about to complete a 3-month iWork 2 work placement. But first of all, if I could come to you, Martin.
Thanks, Joe.
First of all, I suppose, tell us a little bit, what is the iWork 2 project?
The iWork 2 project is a joint funded project funded by the European Social Fund and the Department of Economy. It's a project that works with participants who are blind or partially sighted, who have some form of sight loss, who are trying to get into the world of work either for the first time or returning to work after receiving their diagnosis of sight loss. So we do a series of parts to the programme. So it's a help with job finding, with completing application forms, upskilling in terms of things like getting prepared for interviews. And one of the big parts that we do is finding placements for our participants, as well as hopefully securing some jobs at the end of that at the end of their time with the programme.
And so I suppose, how long has this been running now?
So far, the project has been running for just over 11 months now. So we're coming towards the end of a full year of the project. And in that time, we've had 34 participants join our programme from when we started officially last August. Out of those 34, we've had 11 placements with a number of different organisations throughout Northern Ireland. And those placements have varied from retail assistance, marketing assistance, admin assistance, and also things like store assistance and things like that. And also then we've also secured four of our participants have secured full-time jobs, and one of those was self-employed. And we also have one participant then who is moving on to further projects and further study next year. So some relative success in the first year of the programme, which we're really, really happy about.
That sounds really good. I mean, I was reading something recently that according to our recent research by RNIB, 73% of people of working age who have sight loss are not working. I mean, that is quite a staggering stat, isn't it?
That's correct, Joe. It is. It's a massive stat, and it's one that we're very aware of, especially for this program. And it's always one that we're trying to encourage with the work that we do with employers around Northern Ireland. When we go out and do some work with employers and trying to raise awareness, not only just for the programme of iWork too, but also the work that RNAB does in relation to employment, and it's one of those facts, it's one of those figures that we kind of try to highlight, just to kind of encourage employers to think about, you know, that just because someone has some form of sight loss doesn't necessarily mean they can't work within their workplace.
Would you say that employers think a blind person or a partially sighted person can't do the job as well as a sighted person perhaps could?
Well, you know, I suppose in my year of working on the project and you know, communicating and speaking with a number of the different employers around Northern Ireland, so like a lot of them have been very, you know, have been very forthcoming about some concerns they maybe have had. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's about alleviating those concerns maybe someone does have, and kind of just creating a bit of awareness around, like, well, you know, why is it that you've kind of thought that, and then kind of building that thing of like, well, you know, it's not necessarily that what you're thinking originally is what actually is happening. Mm-hmm. So it's about doing some kind of awareness around that too, and we've been doing a series of awareness raising activities with the employers in the first year as well of the program, with I think it was 120 employees and managers within different organisations throughout Northern Ireland, having some visual awareness training on their doorstep.
Another thing is to be even like, with something like Access to Work, that's a service that exists that it helps someone engage with work at minimal cost to the employer.
It is, yep. And that's one of the things we had always highlight and discuss within employers. One of the things that we do, obviously, within iWork too, is when someone is coming towards the end of the program, and if they have successfully found a job, or you know, we've been able to help them get into employment, you know, it's not that our support ends there and then and there. Our employment officers, Wendy and Claire, they'll continue with support for any of our participants who are going into employment, just ensure that those kind of things are in place before the person starts working full time with an organisation, and just ensuring that, you know, the organisation is fully adapted to mm-hmm. receive someone within their workplace who maybe does have some form of sight loss.
Yeah, so coming to you, Charlie, then. Thanks for coming in and talking to us.
Thank you very much for having me, Joe.
Now, so, Charlie, you've been in with RNAB here, working in the Belfast shop premises here. Now, you've been availing of one of the iWork 2 work placements, isn't that right?
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
So how have you found it?
It's been good, yeah. It's ups and downs, like a roller coaster, you know. It's definitely been more beneficial. Lots of learning curves there and stuff, and I feel a lot more independent. And, you know, I was lucky enough to, because it's within the RNIB, there is a lot of help around, you know, advice-wise and practically-wise, you know, like magnifiers are within arm reach, which is very convenient for someone that's partially sighted like myself.
What age are you, Charlie, if you don't mind me asking?
Not at all, I'm 24.
And have you always been partially sighted then?
Yes, I was born partially sighted.
After leaving school and all that, what was your experience of, you know, if you like, the big wide world?
Ooh.
And that kind of, that leaving school, what'll I do next kind of juncture?
I was always quite uncertain, but I remember one of the thoughts I had was, I wonder if in the work environment will I stand out as well, because I'll have a massive A4 paper, you know, because in school, Joe, when I was doing exams and stuff, Joe, my pages would always be extra and large. You know?
Yeah, large print, etc.
I thought, I was like, oh God, here we go again in the work area, you know. And I was actually thinking, I'm not going to lie, I was like, I might keep it under wraps, you know, because I can't speak for everyone, but for me, a lot of it is like, you don't want to be different. You're like, if everyone else can do it, then I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
But then it kind of took a long time for me to actually accept the help. It reached a point where I was like, right, I need help, I'm not going to get this done. And I'm not stubborn, I was like, I need to get it done, so I'll take the help that's going. And that's what I appreciate a lot about, you know, coming into this placement and stuff and getting everything needed. And everyone's been very patient, I guess, as well, which is much appreciated. But I'd be a lot more difficult if I'd kind of kept quiet and not did that. And
so do you think part of the journey, as well as the kind of practical help, was the actual the confidence?
Yeah, the acceptance.
Acceptance, yeah.
Yeah, it's Because it's a hard thing. You have to be quite confident if you're going to be outed in front of everyone, you know, and it's like use a magnifying while everyone else. There's not, it's hard to describe, but I'm sure a lot of listeners out there that have vision problems will, you know, be able to relate and understand what I'm talking about.
I like your use of the word outed there, because, I mean, yeah, we hear that a lot. People try to keep their vision loss, their sight loss, under wraps or,
yeah,
you know, on the down low. But, I mean, sometimes you just have to be honest, don't you? Just yeah. go, this is me.
But, yeah, definitely, that's it. And that's another, like, that there, the confidence and also the uncertainty, you know what I mean? You're like, there's so many different variables that fall into it. Like, I don't want to ask for help or support because I don't want to be a burden. You know, that kind of way. You don't want to ask your manager, supervisor, when, you know, you have to get over that as well. You have to overcome that and be like, right, I have to be willing to ask for help as well as, you know, accepting it if it's offered, you know.
So what sort of duties or tasks have you been doing in the RNIB shop here in Belfast, sort of on a practical level?
I've been doing the stock and stuff. There's a little shop, very handy shop, does all sorts of products, like, you know, talking books and magnifiers and talking phones and stuff. And a lot of the product stuff, I'd be checking our stock, you know. I'd go and count what's there and get it priced and make sure everything's, you know, in its place and stuff. And but I'd also answer the phone, you know, take orders and send out products to clients and stuff, and a whole range of stuff.
And have you availed of like IT training or any of that kind of thing?
Yeah, I've been doing, there's within the RNIB, I've been in not only the placement have I been doing with the iWork2 scheme. See, one of the brilliant things is that a lot of things have fallen in to that, a lot of things have came out of it as well. So, for example, when I started working here, I was quite shy, I guess, kind of kept myself, just wanted to do my best. But then I've been getting involved in a lot of other projects here within the RNIB. A good example is the IT training. You've said IT yourself. I'm actually doing IT every Monday. Mm-hmm. I've been doing learning more about Microsoft Word, about emails, you know, Microsoft Outlook, and of course Microsoft Excel, my personal favourite. But yeah, I've been learning from that there, which, you know, normally I wouldn't bother. I'd be like, right, Microsoft Excel, if you look at the way it's lots of tiny icons and stuff, and I would be like, no, it's not for me. But, you know, at least I've been challenging myself, and it's been good. I've been feeling great for it as well, and loads of other projects as well, like my Duke of Ed and stuff, and, you know, just getting involved with everything I can, really.
So you're about to finish your work placement, and I mean, the main thing here, I think, and Martin would agree, is that you have to walk away with hopefully a positive experience and have basically learned something and something you can take away.
One of the biggest things for me, I think, and I'm not sure if many people relate or not, but it's uncertainty in big capital letters. Uncertainty. You're not sure what it's going to be like. The great unknown. That will I be accepted? Will I be a burden? Or am I going to be there for 3 days? And because I can't see where the cabinets are, or whatever, people are going to get annoyed. And you got to shake the idea, because I think it really generates from everyone's always their own worst critic, and if you're partially sighted, then you're going to go the extra mile, you're going to push yourself down a wee bit more, you know. And it's, you got to think positive, you got to be willing to do it. And the stuff today and the day and age that we're in, if you're willing to do it, then the equipment and help and is there, whether it's, you know, a magnifier or someone just simply showing you where something is in the office, you know. I'd also like to take this opportunity to big up and a big thank you to my two wonderful managers from downstairs. You guys have been great. And of course, that magical woman, Claire Dixon, in the employment office. Absolute, you guys couldn't have done it without you.
To find out more about the iWork2 project, or indeed any aspect of the RNIB Northern Ireland Employment Service, just give us a call here in our Belfast office on 02890 329373, or you can email the employment team on employmentni@rnib.org.uk, or indeed just check us out on our website. Just search for RNIB iWork2.
And now we hear from Laura and Karen from the new Family Insight Project. This is a partnership between RNIB NI and Angel Eyes NI, here to support families affected by sight loss in living and learning.
Today we're talking about the Family Insight Project. This is a big lottery funded 5-year project led by RNIB NI in partnership with Angel Eyes NI, a local charity set up to support parents of children who are blind or partially sighted. With me today I've got Laura McCauley, the project coordinator, and Karen Wilson, the education advocate. You're very welcome, folks.
Hello.
So Laura, maybe we could start with you. Laura's the project coordinator. Laura, maybe tell us a little bit about the history of the project and I suppose what it's here to do.
Okay, so before the project, family support services were only funded in 2 out of the 5 trust areas across Northern Ireland. So this meant that there was a lack of services in the other 3 trust areas. It's a wide range of support and it very much depends on the family. But realistically, it starts with someone being there from the start. So it's when I would maybe get a referral in through quite often through our ECHO service, I might be the first person who's asked that parent, how are you? How are you coping after that first diagnosis? So maybe for the parent, they've had the medical information, they've had the social services information, and maybe feeling overloaded with information, not really completely understanding what is being explained to them. And it might be that, again, that's my role. It's that first person to check in, how are you? Maybe provide information about the eye condition, provide information about what services are there to support the child and the family. Sight loss, we talk in RNIB about the sight loss journey. And I think for families, it's the whole family that goes on that journey. It's not just the child. I suppose everyone's experience of it is different, but it is a journey that the whole family go on. If I use maybe an example of kind of what would happen and what kind of support from a family. So a recent referral I had gotten recently was for a young child who was diagnosed with albinism. They had actually been in education without any real level of support, or should we say a level of support that the family were unaware of. So in that initial referral, I checked in with the family, made sure that everyone was okay. Mum had explained that she didn't fully understand the eye condition, was concerned about hospital appointments, so we made a referral to the ECHO service. We also looked at their what benefits were available to them to support the family. We also looked at what activities the child could get involved in, some confidence building activities, peer support, both for the child and for the family. And then also a referral to the education advocate, Karen here at Angel Eyes. We would also be looking at referrals to the sensory support teams, maybe, Blind Children UK. So we really do take on that first contact, it's a needs assessment for each individual family.
It sounds very much like you're sort of joining up the different services that already exist.
That's it. Actually, for a lot of families, especially families with children with complex needs, can often, say to me that they have so many different health professionals involved with their child's care. And quite often they don't really know who's who or where they need to go to find out what piece of information. And I suppose one of the things that, when I'm explaining what my role is to a family, I will often say, look, I'm the person who's here. If you do need information, if you contact me, I might not know the answers, but I will try and find out for you. And I think that's it. I kind of maybe think of it as being there to being the anchor in the middle of it, just being a kind of a space that they know that there's somewhere that they can go or pick up the phone, whatever it is. And sometimes it can quite often just be a bad day.
And Karen, just coming to you then, you're the education advocate and you work with Angel Eyes Northern Ireland.
That's correct, yeah.
So maybe you could describe a little of what your job would entail.
Okay, well, my job really is helping parents navigate the education system here in Northern Ireland. So that might be through just chatting them through, giving them information and advice on what resources might be available to support their child with curriculum access, what services are currently available within the education authority and what provisions they could perhaps avail of. So basically it can be like one-to-one advice. So I'm doing chatting to people on telephone or by email or face-to-face. But also it's kind of attending meetings and supporting parents at parent-teacher progress meetings, at annual reviews, etc. And then as well as that, doing workshops for parents, giving them a little bit of information and knowledge and understanding of the different things that will affect their child as they travel through their educational journey.
Okay, so give us an example of the kind of problems that a family with a child with sight loss might encounter in the education system then.
Well, there are a number of difficulties. For one, the statementing process has been an issue. Now, be that getting the statutory assessment or be it getting the statement in place, trying to navigate the different processes that are within that, the different people that need to be involved in that process, the different reports that need to be collated and the different timeframes that have to be met and things to be done within. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a big one. As well as that, though, it's just ensuring that all of the recommendations, etc., that are made by our vision support team here are implemented in the school, and that all staff within a school, are aware of those recommendations and are putting them into place so that the child can access the curriculum and kind of work to their full potential.
And I mean, by the statement and process, we mean that there's a statement that says a child will need extra support with their education. It's a formal document, isn't it?
That's absolutely right. Sorry, I should clarify that. By a statement, I mean a special educational needs statement. And basically, that's one that the education authority would draw up to say that extra support needs to be put into place to allow that child to access the curriculum and have an enriched and fulfilled journey through education. And that can be in place for both mainstream as well as special schools and preschools.
Yes, this is a 5-year project, and it's funded by the Big Lottery here in Northern Ireland. Laura, maybe give us a little idea of the flavour of the kind of support activities that you hope to be running over the next, 5 years.
Okay, well, this is the fun part of my job. So as part of some of the activities that we'll be running family weekends. These family weekends are fantastic. So we have one for standalone sight loss a year and one for children with complex needs. So this is a weekend away for the whole family. It's a chance to meet with other families. I think no matter how many services and we provide, I think really that peer support, meeting other families in a similar position is really important. And that's again for the siblings, so no one's left behind. And it's a fantastic weekend. There's different activities for the children and some information sessions for parents. So we'll have those. We'll also have music therapy sessions, one-to-one music therapy sessions. We have a fantastic music therapist who will go out and deliver music therapy sessions in the home. So that's for children with complex needs. We also have the opportunity for confidence building activities for children with sight loss. So that's things like one-to-one swimming lessons, one-to-one music lessons. And this is on top of other IT technology, access technology information sessions for parents. And we also have a range of family fun days. I'm just back from the farm at the weekend. And we have indoor trampoline place coming up shortly, which is great fun, and it really is a whole family experience.
Is that at Vertigo?
Yes, we are at Vertigo.
Yeah, very good. Yes. In Belfast.
And quite often the parents are much worse than the children.
Yeah, I can imagine. I think it's great myself, yeah. But Karen, coming back to you then, do you find too with parents that there's like a lack of knowledge, or parents benefit from more education and information about, even something like assistive technology or something like that for a child who's blind or farsighted?
Absolutely. I mean, knowledge is power, and you can never have enough information, especially with things like assistive technology, because they change so quickly and different things are progressing all the time. But even just giving simple information from the bare basics about using like a sloping desk, about how that can improve posture, about using heavy lined paper, leaded pencil that's dark, those little simple things that some of us could take for granted that people would know often need to be addressed or redressed as well.
I mean, true, I think when we all think about assistive technology or whatever, or mm-hmm. We all think the high tech stuff, the iPads and apps and things, but sometimes it actually is looking at the practical.
Absolutely, like simple equipment, like as we're just talking about, even the sloping desk or pencil grips, even thinking about then as well as the assistive technology, but just thinking about where the child sits in the classroom and how they access the different resources or within the classroom. Ultimately, it's all about trying to make a child an independent learner and therefore a successful learner. So you want to make sure that things are put into place that allow that child to be able to do that, to learn independently and learn on their own without having to have somebody over their side doing the job for them, basically.
So Laura, what's the reception to the project been like so far?
It's been fantastic. There's been a very high referral rate at the moment, which, you know, is great. I think there's a lot of families who've really needed this support for a long time. I think, you know, just as Karen was saying there as well, that information, having the opportunity to meet with other families and share tips about things that have worked, you know, that knowledge is, mm-hmm. is really great to be tapping into. Because a lot of families they're living the experience, and their knowledge is you know, really incredibly useful for us as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what I'm finding quite interesting as well is families who are at different stages on the journey getting together, and those that are further on being able to, yeah. you know, encourage and support those who just maybe have a child who's been recently diagnosed, etc. And being able to kind of encourage them and show them that, you know, don't worry, you know, things will get better and you will understand this better, and then it's not so daunting.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it is, I think for that first diagnosis, it is absolutely devastating for a family. Their mind skips to worst case scenarios. They're unaware of what support's available. And to create an environment where people can say, look, I understand how you're feeling, is really what's needed at that time. You know, there's a lot of emotional support needed at that early stage.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think it's great as well that this is very much a holistic kind of approach, because we're not only, like Laura's able to give them more information about the eye condition or refer back to ECLOS, etc., but also then you've got the family events and you've got the education. So it's really bringing everything under one kind of umbrella. And as Laura had said earlier, which I think was a good analogy of saying how she's like an anchor, because it is making sure that parents know that there's a one-stop shop, one person that they can always go to in order to access and get information on a range of different matters that are affecting them.
Well, Karen and Laura, thanks so much for coming in and talking to me today. I mean, family support and education support, I mean, there's a lot in there. There's a lot to digest, a lot to kind of get our heads around. I hope to we'll be hearing a lot more from the both of yous in the future, and we can discuss how the project is going and, you know, the different aspects of that. But before you go, Laura, maybe start with you. Just if a family out there is listening and thinks this is something that applies to their situation or there's something in it for them, how would they get in touch?
Okay, well, there's a lot of information about the Family Insight project on the RNIB NI website. So if you go there, you'll find more information about the services provided by the project. Alternatively, you can contact me. My email address is laura.mccauley, M-C-C-A-U-L-E-Y, at rnib.org.uk. You can also contact me by telephone on 077-100-66727.
And Karen, what about your contact details?
You can email me at karen.wilson@angeliesni.org or give me a buzz on 028-90-941634.
Yeah, and of course you can always find more information on our website. Visit rnib.org.uk/family-insight, or you can find RNIB NI or Angel Eyes NI on Facebook and Twitter. Just do a search, you should be able to find us. And by all means, just give the offices a call here in Belfast. Now, next up, Jackie Brown talks to the chair of the British Computer Association for the Blind, that's BCAB.
Thank you very much for joining us. Could you tell us a little bit about BCAB and who it's for?
Okay, so British Computer Association of the Blind is an association that was formed in the 60s which was an association for supporting blind and partially sighted computer users with employment, such as computer-specific tasks that were coming up at the time, and that was mainly on mainframe computers and blind people in employment. However, today, British Computer Association of the Blind advocates itself as a self-help organisation that provides help to blind and partially sighted computer users. So basically, we run an email discussion list that people can subscribe to, and they can ask questions on the list with any topic regarding computers. So that could be, how do I use my new Windows 10 PC, which I've just bought and want to throw out the window because it doesn't work, or how to use Microsoft Office, or what is the best way of getting Microsoft Office, or what brow displays are people using. So these days, pretty much BCAB is more of a self-help group for anybody who is using computers, whether they are employed, not employed, whether they're young, old, anybody really. We also have a helpline on the first Thursday of the month, which is free for anyone to join, and it's just a local rate call to join that. And we also run an annual event, which is called Tech A Break, which is basically where we have seminars. It's normally at the Crewe Arms Hotel, and we run several seminars in that, and we have our general meeting on Saturday afternoon.
So there's a lot happening in the BCAB community, and you are the chairperson, am I right?
That's right, yes.
Okay, and the Board of Trustees is made up of all blind and visually impaired people, is that right?
Yes, that's correct. So all the members of the association, in fact, there are no sighted people in the association apart from honorary members. So all the people who are joined in the association have to be blind.
Okay, how many members do we have?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question. It's around just under the 300 membership mark now. And we have members, different types of membership. So we have the full membership, which is £21 a year. And that gives you basically complete voting rights and also the ability to read articles that we post, because we do actually post quite a lot of articles in the newsletter, which are sort of contributed by the users. So those are available to people both in the newsletter and on the website for fully paid members. They are also available to associate members who pay £15 a year. But the difference between full and associate members is that associate members don't have voting rights. So if you want to come and shape the future of the association, then the full membership is where you need to go. The other benefit of having membership as well is that we do actually offer discounts on our, for example, some of the products that we sell, and also on the Tech A Break as well.
It is quite a busy community. And so if anybody is interested, how do they get in touch? Where do they go, Andrew?
Basically, our website is www.bcab.org.uk, or you can email me, which is chair@bcab.org.uk.
Okay, Andrew Hodgson, Chair of BCAB, thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you very much.
Well, joining us now is Amy Stewart for another Resource Centre Shop Roundup. Amy, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Joe.
Tell me, what have you got to tell us today?
Couple of interesting new developments. I got a package in the post from Ambutech the other day. Ambutech are the cane people. I think they're based in Canada somewhere. But we got a nice selection of new custom colours.
Oh, wait, so that's for canes then?
Yeah, you can now personalise your traditional white cane with lots of different touches. So there's a whole selection of different colours that you can get the actual shaft of your cane coloured. So you can now get 10 different colours to choose from. And of course, you can have traditional white, but you can also have a black one, a red one, blue, pink, yellow, green, orange, gold. And for the first time ever, you can now get a really trendy purple one. It's a beautiful deep purple colour.
Fantastic.
They are some amazing colours, and they're all done in proper reflective paint, so you get all the benefits of a cane that would reflect light on the street or reflect from car lights. But you can have it in all of these brilliant, trendy, different colours. And if you're traditional and you like having a white cane, you can still personalise it a bit with a different coloured grip on top. So you can get grips in four fresh new colours. So you get them in blue and green, orange and pink. And that's a good way if you want to have a traditional white cane to make it more your own with a different coloured handle on top.
I really like that idea, because as a cane user myself, I mean, I've always kept it the way it is, the way I've got it out of the shop.
Well, lots of people came to us before before it was possible to get coloured canes, lots of people would come through the shop, they would buy a white cane and they would take it home and put nail polish on it or put glitter on it and wee sparkly bits in different colours themselves, but none of it had the proper reflective qualities of the paint that you get now. So it's been a great development that you're able to personalise your cane in these different ways and really make it your own.
I like it. Really modern thinking, that, I think.
Oh, very, very clever. Very nice touch. What else have I got? A new service for your mobile telephone. This is called Fuss-Free Phones. You heard of Fuss-Free Phones?
I've seen something about it on social media, but I'm not entirely sure what it is.
Fuss-Free Phones is like having your own telephonist service. It's nearly like having a PA. When you get this service, you're getting access to a dedicated UK call centre that will be able to put you through to your contacts. So you push a button on the back of your phone and you get through to a call centre and you say to them, phone Joe for me, please. And they have access to all of your contacts and they'll be able to put you through to Joe.
Super.
You could say, text Joe, please, and let him know that I'll be in the studio at 11 and they'll be able to do that for you. Or you could say, I'm screening calls and I don't want to talk to Joe this week. And they will make sure that if Joe tries to call, he'll never be put through. So it's like having your own PA or your own telephonist service to take care of calls and put you through to your contacts, send texts and screen out any nuisance calls that you don't want. And the way it works is you buy a Doro clamshell mobile phone. It's a Doro 612, so it's a nice, trendy little clamshell. And in addition, you buy a contract with the Fuss-Free Phones service. Mm-hmm. So 1 month with the service would cost you £83.33 ex-VAT. But if you went to 6 months, it would cost you £165.67 for the full 6 months of the mm-hmm. service. It's about £28 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you bought 12 months worth of the service, it would cost you £245.67, and that's about £20 a month for the service. And that gets you 600 minutes of activity from this call centre per month. So that's loads. That's more than enough to send loads of text messages and get put through to loads of people. And it sounds like it would be a tremendous service. And it includes, of course, your handset. And if you wanted to, you don't have to use the service with... You can just use the dial pad on your phone.
Oh, it's like optional.
Yeah. It is optional. And there's a big button on the back of the phone. And when you push that, that gets you immediately through to this call centre.
God, I like that. That actually appeals to the lazy side of me.
It's very clever. It sounds like a nice service, and it is a UK call centre, so get all the benefits of having someone that's able to do that for you, and you still have a phone that you're able to use without having to use the call centre if you don't want to.
Excellent. Okay, finally, have you any other news?
Yes, other news. A lot of you will be familiar with Louise Neeson in the shop. Louise is going off on maternity leave, so congratulations to her from all of us. When Louise goes off on her maternity, we have a new member of staff starting in her place called Andrea. Andrea starts with us Friday coming. And Andrea's the new Louise. Also, Fergal, that a lot of you will have been talking to over the last year. Fergal was only with us for a year and he has finished now. And the new Fergal is Scott. And whenever you phone into the shop, you'll get through to Scott. And both Scott and Andrea are dead keen and really willing to help. And cut them some slack. They're brand new. They're still figuring out all of the products, but they will soon have the hang of it. And so whenever you phone the shop, you'll be talking to Scott or Andrea or myself.
Well, brilliant. Of course, to get in touch with Amy and the rest of the guys down in the shop, just ring 028 90 329 373.
That's us.
Amy, thanks very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks, Joe.
And that's about it for another Sound Vision Online Best of Bonanza. Thanks very much, as always, to everyone for their contributions and for getting involved. Next time, we'll hear more from Jennifer as she talks to our fabulous volunteers, and Jackie will have more Tech That podcasts, and who knows what else might take her fancy.
As always, just get in touch with us here at Sound Vision Online. You can contact the Belfast office here on 028 90 329 373. You can email us at soundvisiononline@rnib.com. rnib.org.uk. Find us on Facebook at RNIB Northern Ireland, or you can tweet us at RNIBNI.
And do take the time out of your fantastic, wonderful, busy lives to visit us online at www.soundvisiononline.co.uk, where you can hear new podcasts that are put up regularly.
So for me, Michael Selby.
And for me, Sharon Jennings.
And me, Joe Kenny.
Goodbye, enjoy the summer, and we'll speak to you again in September. Cheerio.
RNIB Northern Ireland. Supporting people with sight loss.